now called Blatchford v. Native Village of Noatak. That is, as you know, was up to the United States Supreme Court. The court ruled in favor of the state, saying the state was immune from suit, at least for monetary damages. That case is now back in the district court, but no proceedings have occurred yet. The proceedings that are envisioned, at least by the Native Village of Noatak, as I understand it, are to ask the district court to issue an injunction against the state violating the program laws that it has changed 6 years ago. They're going to seek prospective relief to prevent the state from violating the Native Village's rights under federal law, which they claim were violated because of the way the program was run. We think that the case is moot and it's over, but that's yet to be decided. It is not significant with respect to sovereignty. The case is not significant with respect to sovereignty anymore. Native Village of Phoenix High IRA Council v. State of Alaska, Indian Child Welfare Act case. That case was up to the Ninth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit ruled that before Alaska Native Villages may exercise sovereign powers, they have to be it has to be decided on the basis of an evidentiary hearing that they are an historical sovereign and are as such entitled to exercise those powers. That is a case which we certainly say seems to be very inconsistent with other Ninth Circuit cases.
And yet that's 1991 case?
Yes, sir. That was in September.
But it's a different three-judge panel, right?
Yes.
30 judges, they pick three different ones and get a whole different opinion.
That's true. That is obviously a reason for by which the U.S. Supreme Court decides, or a factor that they look at in deciding whether or not a particular case is worthy of review. If they find that there is a conflict within a circuit or between perhaps the Ninth Circuit and the Alaska Supreme Court, which there clearly is. So there are a lot of reasons why in the near future we expect that the U.S. Supreme Court will revisit the Alaska sovereignty question. Tanana Chiefs v. Cooper is over. It's not a sovereignty case, really. Alyeska Pipeline Service v. Kudika Native Village of Copper Center. That case, Judge Holland, I'm not sure if I mentioned it. Yes, I did, on page 6 of my memo. On January 17th, Judge Holland issued a tentative decision which basically says that he is going to wait until Tyonek is decided before he makes his final ruling. So bottom line is a lot has been put on hold by Tyonek and waiting to find out where it goes. Chilcat Indian Village, IRA v. Johnson. There's a tribal court proceeding going on now, and it's not clear when that will be finished, and once the tribal court proceeding is completed, presumably the case will go back to the district court for proceedings which aren't entirely clear, because there isn't any clear law, and I'm sure you can appreciate that, there isn't any clear law as to the interplay between the federal courts and tribal courts and how federal courts review tribal court decisions, and if they have the authority to do so. So that's a whole new chapter of sovereignty, which we're not even yet gotten to. Native Village of Stevens. The next two cases are complete. That's Alaska Management and Nome Eskimo Community. Nanana Fuel, we're waiting for a decision from the Alaska Supreme Court on that. Just note very briefly that in my conclusion, and perhaps this will help answer one of the one of the questions you posed and something that was raised by Senator Adams earlier. An Athabascan native out of Allakaket, Samson Henry, was cited for shooting a moose out of season, a cow moose during a bull moose season. He was, and it was cited as a criminal violation in the district court in Fairbanks. The Tanana Chiefs Conference and its attorneys representing Samson Henry have filed a brief saying that the state court is without jurisdiction to prosecute that criminal case because it occurred in Indian country. So although PL 280 certainly will get seems to be the federal statute which, when interpreted, will resolve that issue, the bounds are not clear. The question will ultimately be, even though the shooting of the moose is prosecuted as a crime, is it really more of a civil regulatory function of the state of Alaska, or is it more a criminal function of the state of Alaska? If it is criminal, PL 280 will say that the state has jurisdiction in Indian country. If it is civil regulatory, it will, the PL 280 says the state of Alaska probably does not have jurisdiction. Once that question is answered, then we have to get back to whether or not where the shooting actually took place was on Indian country. And of course, that hasn't been, we're not even sure where it occurred yet. So that is the present live controversy that may well raise another case to the Alaska Supreme Court or to the U.S. Supreme Court about the existence or extent of Indian country in Alaska.
Thank you. Have you got requests from various departments at all on requests for how they should handle this or that? Or I mean, there are just numerous programs providing service, providing funding that deal with the various entities. What have you got in terms of requests pending? Anything, or do you have a lot of requests? Or
well, I will just tell you in general how I guess we have responded, and perhaps Bruce wants to address this also. But in general, we have been telling our departments, well, let me back up. For years, at least the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs have, as a general rule, when dealing with grants and water projects or other sorts of projects in rural Alaska, in the villages, when dealing with a traditional council or an IRA council, have requested waivers of sovereign immunity, which would allow us to enforce the provisions under which we provided grants for water, sewer, other community projects. Because of Tyonic, we are advising all departments to look at their programs and decide whether or not it is may well be appropriate to use waivers of sovereign immunity in a more widespread fashion for the reasons that I stated to you earlier, that if the state of Alaska is going to expend public money in a place where there is the potential for either the exclusion of persons or the use of the money not for people other than all the residents of a particular area, we feel like we have the responsibility to ensure that that doesn't occur. And right now, the way to do that is through a waiver of sovereign immunity, and as I said, through contractual requirements that the money be spent for public purposes and not simply for the members of that particular organization or Native village. That's what's, in general, going on now. And quite frankly, that isn't very much different than what we've been doing all along. We're not taking a we're not doing anything very differently right now than the day before Tyonic was decided. At some point we may have to, but that's not happening.
With regard to the, and I'm trying to go back to the Sheffield administration and the task force that we had then on state and local relations. At the time, I believe we had presentations that indicated that the federal courts would consider the sovereignty questions in light of the way entities were treated, not just what you say your treatment is. And a concern that I have that is now back, because as I say, I have supported and voted for appropriations for things that required waivers in the past, and I'm now a little bit more concerned, because it seems like that rule was, it doesn't matter what you say you're doing. If, in fact, you treat an entity like a government, you are establishing a pattern of governmental powers. And if that's the case, and if we're back with all this stuff bubbling at the top again, I wonder if we should be more reluctant to treat entities with governmental powers or governmental relationships, even if the waivers are there. And yet, you still want to deliver the services, and that's the most efficient way to deliver the services. It seems like we're getting ourselves into more of a catch-22 with some of those waivers.
Senator, I don't think we are. I do not think that it hampers our legal arguments, to the contrary, to protect ourselves when we're doing that. And again, as I said, it doesn't matter what the state does, because this is an issue of federal law, and ultimately it will be resolved by federal courts or Congress, not by what the state of Alaska does specifically, although we certainly, how we react to the process may dictate what the outcome is. But we are not the one that will be deciding what the outcome is.
Okay, with regard to the term dependent Indian community, mm-hmm. and back to the Tayana case, were any appropriations of a state nature used in the argument to determine that this was a dependent Indian community with a unique relationship to government to government or anything else? I know federal appropriations were. Anything that was state participated in, were any of those used or cited?
Not by the Ninth Circuit, no, sir.
Were they in the arguments of the case?
To the best of my recollection, they were not.
So it really.
I'm quite certain they were not.
Okay, so it really is only what the federal government does. It's not. I mean, what we do doesn't matter. It's if the federal government treats an area as a dependent Indian community, that has a different effect than what the state does.
Right, but we have in the past, and I used an analysis of the amount of state money that goes into a community to attempt to rebut an argument that, in fact, federal services or the federal presence in an area is such that it is deserving of being a dependent Indian community.
So
if we can prove that there is an enormous amount of state resources going there as opposed to what the feds are putting in there, that cuts the other way.
So we can, in fact, benefit by appropriations to areas claiming to be dependent Indian communities under that analysis.
Well, it's perhaps a strange way of, a backward way of thinking about it, but not backward of. Different way of thinking about it, but yes.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what
the
effect
is. No, it's a two-edged sword.
It is a
two-edged sword.
Yes, yes, Senator, that's right. Yes.
One question.
Senator Adams.
Yes. Since we have pending litigations on hold waiting for the Tayonic decisions, what's the time frame of that court ruling?
The Tayonic ruling?
Yeah.
Senator, as I said, the final briefs, unless there's extension of time, which usually do not occur at the U.S. Supreme Court level, would be May 13th of this year. At that point, the Supreme Court has what they call conferences, private conferences, to decide. They have to have four justices who say, yes, we want to review this case. If four justices say that, then the case will be reviewed. They can decide that on May 14th. They could decide it a year from May 14th. My best guess from past practice is that if they don't decide before they recess for the summer, on October 1st or 2nd or 3rd, there will be an order out October 1st, 2nd or 3rd of 1992 saying we will review this case or we will not. If they do not, we're there. If they do review the case, briefs will then be filed. I would presume that oral argument would be scheduled for February or March of 1993, and a decision perhaps before the summer recess of 93.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing further to come before the committee, we're adjourned.